Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 3rd of December. It is 1 month until the Iowa caucuses, and we are going to be talking all things political this hour of the program with Julie Mason. Julie is the White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle and has become a fairly frequent guest on Hardball, which is where I first saw her and thought she'd be a great guest for our 9 a.m. Monday program. So Julie is here to talk about, well, we're going to start with the latest poll from the Des Moines Register showing Mike Huckabee. This is a race that Mitt Romney was supposed to win. Mike Huckabee is leading the Republicans, and Barack Obama has pulled ahead, still kind of a statistical dead heat here, but he has pulled ahead in the Democratic presidential caucuses in Iowa, so we will look at that. We also want to let you know that we are going to Iowa for the caucuses, which should be a whole lot of fun. This all came about because, you see, the power of listeners. Mary called when we had an open line a little while ago, and Mary lives in Dubuque, and said, you know, come to the caucuses. I said, Mary, will you have chocolate cake? Mary said, of course. Actually, Mary, we'll bring the chocolate cake. Don't worry. So we're going to do two broadcasts. We're going to be at a diner in Dubuque, and we're going to gather people who will be going to the caucuses. We'll do a show the day of the caucuses on January 3rd, and then we'll analyze what's going on at the caucuses on January 4 on Friday. So I can't wait. We're going to have fun. And we'll have some Iowa listeners joining us, and we'll really be in the political swing of things January 3rd and January 4th from Dubuque, live from Dubuque, Iowa. We're going to welcome phone calls for Julie. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Julie. Thank you so much for being with us.
Kathleen, I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
I saw you on Chris Matthews several times, actually. You're becoming a semi-regular. I thought, we got to get her. She's good. She's good.
Chris. Well, you know, what can you say about that guy?
Well, can you say, you got to love him because, you know, there he is. You know, he's not pretentious. He's a smart guy. He just talks too much sometimes.
He's about half crazy. It's a great show.
Yeah, it is a great show. I love it. And particularly now, it's a great show. All right, let's start with these Des Moines Register polls. And let's start with Mike Huckabee. You know, I've been saying this guy is going to catch on for a long time. I don't want to say I was prescient here.
But I knew all along.
Yeah, all along. There's something genuine about this guy, Julie. There's something that's there he is. He's not shifting positions on things. He's resonating. Why?
Because he doesn't, well, for a lot of reasons. One, you know, as you know, Kathleen, the social conservatives have been looking and looking for a candidate to back. And he looks like their guy. You know, Fred Thompson is kind of a bust. Obviously, they can't support Giuliani. Romney, they're very uncomfortable with. Here comes Huckabee. He's a preacher. He's actually a preacher. And he talks the talk. Mm-hmm. And he does, like you said, he seems very genuine. People are really responding to that, and now we see it in the polls. He's overtaking Romney in Iowa.
If he wins in Iowa, it seems to me as though that is really, really bad news for Romney.
Yes, and it's terrible news for Giuliani, too.
Yeah?
Really bad for Romney. Romney has poured so much money into Iowa. All those ads, and he spent a lot of time there, and his family has spent time there. And he was really banking on a win there to give him that, you know, when you win Iowa, you are instantly credible. You instantly look good. And to lose Iowa, man, you've got to work so hard, and you really have to pull out a win in New Hampshire or even South Carolina just to stay in it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that people are having a hard time, as I seem to be a little bit, figuring out who Romney is? He doesn't have this is what I really believe in air about him.
There's something about him that really reminds me of an IBM salesman from the 1950s.
Oh, my gosh.
Doesn't it? I mean, because he's very, I mean, you know, his whole bearing, his posture, he has a very silky voice.
Yes.
And he doesn't seem gritty enough. Or there's people like, you know, they like, even though, for example, Giuliani has a lot of flaws, and they're hurting him politically. People like to see that. They don't want perfect. They don't want a perfect guy with a perfect family and perfectly honed positions.
Mm-hmm.
They want it a little rough around the edges so they can identify. People like to identify with a presidential candidate. Something about Romney, it's just people, they like him. They like what he's saying. But I understand what you're saying. They seem basically because they're uncomfortable with him on some level.
He has, I don't know, what was it, in Harper's or the Atlantic Monthly, this article about the number of people he has working on his behalf, the number of people who are doing focus groups and who are working the politics and trying to figure out what his position ought to be on certain issues, instead of, you can get tripped up pretty easily if you're not saying what you really believe in.
Exactly. If you have to stick to a script, that's when you screw up. And although, you know, I think that I've heard a lot of conservatives say that they believe that, Romney, who used to be pro-choice, he's now come around. He's pro-life.
Yeah.
And they feel that that's a sincere shift in his thinking. I mean, they say that he's conveyed that sincerely, not that it's sort of the politics of convenience. I don't know.
Yeah. What about this speech he's supposed to give later this week on his religion? Does he need to give such a speech, Julie?
Yes. Gosh, I mean, a friend of mine at the Washington Times recently did a profile of Romney and described Mormonism as, you know, part of Christianity, which technically it is. And this reporter got so many furious letters and phone calls from readers saying, how dare you call Mormonism part of the Christian faith? It is not. And so there's a lot of misconception and fear and anger about Mormonism out there that is not really being expressed to pollsters, but it seems. It does seem that Romney really needs to address that.
Yeah. Let's look at the Democrats for a moment here. Obama now leading with a choice of 28% of the likely caucus goers, up from 22%, mm-hmm. which seems significant to me.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton down to 25%, down from 29%. Mm-hmm. And John Edwards is pretty much holding steady at 23%. What's causing the change in the lead here? And is it significant at all, Julie, or not?
Well, I think people are getting more comfortable with the idea of Obama, especially in Iowa. He spent some time there. People are starting to like him. And the idea of a very strong black man running for president doesn't sound so crazy anymore. You know, when he was first running, the line was, oh, he could never win this
right.
country, would never vote for a black man. But now, people are kind of looking at him saying, yeah, okay, I can see it. It works. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's past time. And so I think he's really sort of inoculated those kinds of, not prejudices, I just want to say sort of like a discomfort or an uneasiness with his electability. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Also, Hillary doesn't do herself many favors. She's made a few mistakes in Iowa, especially after that Democratic debate in Philadelphia. I'm sure you've talked about that,
right.
where she came out afterwards and sort of blamed other people for her poor performance. And that, it hasn't sat right with people. She's come across as a little tough, a little brittle, which is hard to be when you're a woman candidate. You can't be too soft because
right.
people think you're soft. You can't be too tough because then nobody likes you. So it's a really hard line to walk. I think she's had some trouble. But that's what's so exciting about this is that just the fact that it's so fluid and Obama's coming up shows that there's no such thing as a sure thing,
mm-hmm.
especially in Iowa. I mean, you think back to 2004 when Howard Dean was the sure thing. I mean, he was the nominee. It was forget it. Don't even show up. Like what happened? John Kerry won Iowa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think what it means for me is that more people will be paying attention to the race rather than tuning out because it's a foregone conclusion. And that's terrific when you think of how few people vote now.
Right. Isn't it weird that you've got Hillary who's got to be, I mean, she's the first woman candidate, so she's got to be tough, particularly on military issues, and be careful of the comments like, I know my way around the kitchen. And he, on the other hand, has got to show this softer side to woo women voters. The Times had an interesting article yesterday or Saturday over the weekend on this, wooing female voters by growing up in a family where my mother was the breadwinner, my mother took care of me, et cetera. I understand single parenting. I understand what women are going through. I understand strong women. I'm married to one. I mean, they have to do – it's very strange. And he's the first African-American serious candidate.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. And you see John Edwards trying to play that too. He, you know, every other day he's putting his wife out there. She's the one making the attacks on Hillary Clinton, which is very interesting because maybe he feels
right.
like he can't do that's going to turn off women if he does that. And he also, you know, he's talking up women's issues a lot. So that's definitely women are definitely a target audience, especially in the Democratic race. I mean, you don't hear Republicans talking like that. Not yet.
Right. Well, and in Iowa, what is it? Women represent roughly 6 in 10 Democratic caucus goers.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, those caucuses, that's the thing. It's, you know, I was reading today Hillary is setting up sort of a buddy system for caucus goers to give like maybe first-time caucus goers a little support. And I could see where it could be very intimidating if you're a first-time caucus goer to go into those meetings and defend your candidate. If really, you know, a lot of presidential election voters, they aren't as hardcore as off-year election voters. They may have a feeling about someone and support them, but not really be able to really argue it with someone who feels strongly for someone else. So I think even we're a month away, I think things could change again. Mm-hmm. And we could end up surprised on caucus night, as we have so many other times.
Yeah. So, but tell me, Julie, what's been going on the last particularly month and a half? All the national polls showing Hillary Clinton had this locked up. She was just way, way, way ahead, double-digit mm-hmm. figures ahead. And now in the last 4 weeks, is it the result of one debate? Is it the result of Obama coming on stronger that he's showing momentum here? I don't get it.
I think it's a combination of things, Kathleen. I don't think that debates have done much. That last debate, that CNN YouTube debate, I've heard 10 million people watched. I don't know if that's true. That sounds a little high to me, but still, I don't think that debates have really moved the numbers that much. I think the candidates themselves have done a lot. And also, I think Iowa and New Hampshire, I know this for sure, Iowa and New Hampshire, they're like girlfriends who don't want to be taken for granted. Just when you think you have them nailed down, they're going to flip on you. Hmm. And they don't like those polls that show, Hillary's got it locked up, Romney's got it locked up. They don't like that. And they don't make up their minds until very late. And that's why we've seen these polls sort of fluid. At the same time, I think the candidates, Obama has made some really great strides. And he's performed very well. And there's something about her that people are uncomfortable with. She's so calculating. She strives so hard to be perfect. And I think what helps her is all the retail politicking she's been doing in Iowa, because people say they have an image of her that when they meet her personally doesn't hold up, that she's a lot nicer, warmer, she's friendlier in person. And so I think the people who've met her, who've had a chance to meet her in Iowa, New Hampshire, like her, but I don't think she's had a chance to meet every voter yet. And so I think that's part of it, is that people are sort of, where her numbers are slipping a little bit, they're tuning into some of the stereotypes about her that she is reinforcing through her own campaign mm-hmm. behavior.
It's interesting. We've had people call because our audience reaches the eastern end of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And we've had all these people call them. We're kind of jealous of them because we're trying to get them on the air. And they're saying, oh, I've met each of these guys and gals 2 times. I had a private mm-hmm. dinner with one of them. It's mm-hmm. like they have them right at their doorsteps all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's
terrific for a political reporter like myself to go to Iowa and to talk to voters who are so informed, and they've met the candidates, and they've taken the time to go. There's such a rap on Iowa that it's too homogenous, it's too white, it doesn't look like America. They shouldn't
right.
have the right
yeah.
of first choice. But the thing is, they take it so seriously, and they're so dedicated about it that I've got no problem with it. If they want to choose, they're really after work, they're going to candidate forums, and on the weekends they're hosting events in their homes. They really take it seriously, and it's such a old fashioned democracy there, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. So will you be there for the caucus too?
Yeah, I'm going. Right, I'm going. I'll be going, in and out, but right after Christmas, I'll be moving there until the caucuses, and then on to New Hampshire.
So. Oh my! So you'll be able to go door to door too. Hey, everybody in Iowa will know Julie.
Well, and the thing is, for reporters, we get a really up-close look at candidates, too. I mean, here in Washington, outside of Congress, where you do have sort of hand-to-hand combat with office holders, in Iowa, you really can go to, like, a really small place, hear the candidate talk to 10 different people. It's terrific.
Yeah. Comment on this before we take a break here and go to phone calls in a moment. Frank Rich's column yesterday. He writes about Obama. There's a fascinating hidden storyline in the 2008 campaign that speaks to the potential prowess of an Obama candidacy. Despite the thuggish name calling of a few right wing diehards, Rush Limbaugh mocking Barack Hussein Odumbo, the dirty secret of a number of conservatives is that they are disarmed by Mr. Obama, even though they know his record is more liberal than Mrs. Clinton's. The drumbeat of approval, and then he goes on to talk about, has been remarkably steady. Of people who are kind of joining his bandwagon.
Right, that's true. And, Karl Rove and the Bush administration really, really wanted the party this year to run against Hillary. They didn't want to have to figure out how to run against Obama.
Yeah.
Because they figure Hillary, a lot of people don't like her. Wouldn't be that hard to run against her. They were scared to death of Obama, and that's true of a lot of the Republican establishment. They don't know how to run against a guy like that.
Mm-hmm. Who are they going to nominate, Julie? What do you feel it? What do you feel is going to happen to the Republicans?
For the longest time, I've been saying Romney, because I felt like he's appealing, and once he figured out the Mormon thing and how to explain it to people, that he would prevail, just because, you know, the more people get to know, the more Republicans get to know Giuliani, the less they like him. And I just saw him sort of fading out and his national strategy not really taking over. But now I don't know. I mean, if Huckabee comes out of Iowa pretty strong, where it looks like he might, boy, it just throws the whole thing into turmoil. I mean, that's the interesting race to watch. I mean, the Democrats are pretty interesting, but the Republicans, it's just, you know, what can you say about those guys? Who are they going to pick? I have no idea.
Right. Huckabee, personable as he is, has some extremely conservative positions, doesn't he? I mean, some aren't. He kind of surprises you, but some of the gun issue, it's and a few others, he's very conservative.
Yeah, on the social issues, he's very conservative. It's true, and which is fine in a primary, which is great in a primary. But when you have to run, I mean, you see how George Bush ran as a centrist when he got out. Once he got the nomination, he skittered right towards the middle, and it would be interesting to see Huckabee try to do that, given the positions he took as governor of Arkansas.
Do you think President Bush, and maybe they don't want him anywhere near them,
they don't.
Yeah, they probably
They'll
don't.
Take his money, though. They'll take his money.
Well, where's his money going, Julie?
Well, he'll do little fundraisers for candidates and stuff like that. I mean, there's still plenty of people who will pay lots of money to have their picture taken with the president. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's extraordinary because we talk about his low approval ratings, but that's not true among Republicans. Among Republicans, he's still got a 75% approval rating. He and Cheney are still big cash cows for the party.
Mm-hmm. I heard you the last time, you've probably been on since then, but the last time I saw you on Matthews, you were talking, it was the day that, you know, the two paragraphs came from the Scott McClellan book, and Chris went on and gave the two paragraphs at least 10 times. You obviously know him. Is there going to be some big thing coming from the publication of that book beyond those enticing two paragraphs?
Well, I think those two paragraphs about Karl Rove and Scooter Libby go to the heart of what Scott has to say about his time as press secretary. I mean, that was the hugest controversy that he had to deal with. Certainly there was the war, but that was more Ari Fleischer's thing. I think that a lot of the book is going to deal with that, because that Scott has some scores to settle with regard to how he was treated during the Libby Rove matter. I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to him about his book, but just knowing Scott and having been there and watched it, I think that that's really going to be the heart of it. I don't think there's going to be like revelation after revelation. Scott's not a bomb thrower, and he certainly is not going to throw any bombs at President Bush. He's still very loyal to the president, and he's not going to try to take him down at all. But as for Rove and Libby, I mean, they're on their own. I don't think Scott cares about them at all.
Yeah. And what about Rove? How is Rove maneuvering this presidential campaign? Is he's quite a political genius in many ways. Is he in the waters here? Is he helping somebody or not?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's available if anyone wants to hire him. He's radioactive, though. He really is.
Yeah.
And if any campaign is sort of publicly known to be dealing with Rove, they would take a little hit on that, especially after the 2006 midterm elections when Republicans lost Congress. And everyone was saying, well, if Rove is such a genius, you know, how could this happen? Because right up until the very end, both Rove and Bush were predicting that Republicans would win, that it was going to be a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they came out looking not as brilliant as previously. So Rove, you know, Rove is, like we say around here, Rove is doing Rove right now. He's working on books and giving speeches, and he's writing a column for Newsweek.
We'll take phone calls for Julie Mason in a moment. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Julie Mason is our guest for all things political this hour. She's the White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. As she said, right after Christmas, she'll be camped out in Iowa herself, and she's been back and forth talking to voters in Iowa about the caucuses. We're looking at a number of issues, starting with the poll that was released by the Des Moines Register over the weekend that looked at Mike Huckabee, now, you know, taking the lead here in Iowa, which is a bit of a surprise. Barack Obama pulling ahead of Hillary Clinton, and still a very close three-way race there with John Edwards in the race very much as well. So call us, okay, or send an email if you would like. The email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Lines are open for you right now. And just a reminder that we're going to Iowa. We just got the official news today. So we're going to be covering the caucuses and take this show to, isn't this perfect, to a diner in Dubuque where we will have breakfast and talk with caucus goers and maybe some of the candidates, if any of them are in Iowa. So we'll be there the day the caucuses, broadcasting live from 9 to 11, and then the day after talking about the results of those caucuses. Should be fun. All right, phone calls from you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Julie Mason is our guest, White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050, Milwaukee. And we start our calls with Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, one thing that I'm concerned about with all the talk about Mike Huckabee, there's so much focus on his being a likable, whimsical, quotable guy, kind of guy that you'd like to hang out with. And that sounds so much like the coverage of another governor who is now sitting in the White House. And we all know the tremendous price and cost that this country has paid for the press not really examining the record of that particular governor. And there was a show on Wisconsin Public Radio on the media this week that interviewed the editor of an alternative newspaper down in Arkansas, citing case after case after case of Mike Huckabee on ethics issues, charges, his trying to claim $70,000 worth of furniture that was donated to the governor's mansion as his personal furniture. And he didn't let go of that until he was told it would be outright illegal. When is the press going to start reporting that stuff, get off the personality into the facts?
Well, the fact that you know about that stuff would indicate to me that the press is already on it. I agree that the mainstream press has been a little slow to do the real investigative work on Huckabee. But, you know, if he does do well in Iowa and if he continues to do well in the polls, that stuff is going to be a much more prominent part of the coverage. His supporters will call it the backlash. But the fact is, and I hate to say this, and I wish it were otherwise, but people do vote for who they like and who they think is a nice guy and who they want to hang out with. That played such a big role in how President Bush got elected. And you know, reporters can write this stuff and they can investigate it, but you can't force people to read the paper. You can't force them to really, really educate themselves, because especially in a presidential election, people vote, superficial sounds pejorative, and I don't mean it that way, but a lot of people are sort of fair-weather voters, and they show up because they kind of like someone. And that was a lot of what we heard about President Bush. Like, yeah, I don't agree with everything he says, but, you know, I just like the guy, and I trust him.
Yeah. What's the name of the newspaper, Mark?
I can't remember it, but it's down, it's in the Capitol, and it shouldn't be too hard for you guys to find. But, I mean, he had, you know, one case after another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a former journalist myself, and I guess I just would I would respectfully disagree with your guest's opinion. I think people are hungering for information, and there's too much focus in the national media on these personality things. And the only reason I know of this is because on the press, or on the media, I guess it is, the show that I listen to,
yeah.
You know, they really take an alternative look at the press. It's one of the few places in the near mainstream media where you can get some of the things that go under and unreported. So I would just really encourage the Houston Chronicle and other papers, get down to Arkansas, take a look at this guy's background, because
I'm dying to go to Arkansas.
He's another George Bush.
Your point is really well taken, Mike. I appreciate it. And I think you and I can both agree that the press can do a heck of a lot better covering the substance of these candidates. We do get caught up in the superficial aspects, for sure.
Yeah. On the other hand, there have already been an incredible number of debates, and you can't say, sometimes the debates go way off in a weird direction, but you can't say that there hasn't been a lot of discussion on the issues.
And on the internet, too.
Right.
The newspapers themselves, there isn't as much space as there used to be, but if you go to a newspaper's website, there's tons of information.
Right. And it is interesting. Tell me why you think this is the case. As he was talking about this, when somebody is running, we all have much more knowledge of people who are running for national office who may be from Wisconsin because we've followed them for a long period of time, mm-hmm. or people in Massachusetts who are going to know more about Romney, or people in Arkansas who are going to know more about Huckabee. And we're always amazed how that we get this glowing report for them once they run for national office, mm-hmm. and we don't do the digging that's already been done. They're not as examined. Mm-hmm. Does it take the national election for all of that to come forward, for people to do that kind of digging, do you think, Julie?
It's hard to say. Certainly when President Bush, well, then Governor Bush, was running, we did tons and tons of stories looking at his background and his record, sort of raising some flags about some things, about his lack of experience in foreign policy, and there were some other areas, too, where there were some concerns. But like I said, you can't force people to absorb that. People will read what they want to read, and that's, you know, that's part of democracy. You are not required to take an exam when you vote. So yeah, sure. It's when these people come from places like Arkansas and Texas, usually it falls to the state press, the local press, mm-hmm. to raise these issues because they know the guy and they know what he's about and they know what he's done and his record. And that does usually eventually come to the surface. I mean, these people don't run in obscurity.
Right. Well, your point is well taken, Mark, and we'll try and find somebody from that paper to get more information on Huckabee. Because all of a sudden, here he is. He's front and center. Thanks, Mark, for the call. Michael is next from Platteville. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much, and good morning. In the 2004 election, I lived in Iowa, and I worked a year on the Howard Dean campaign and was a caucus representative at the caucuses during that election. As the caucuses actually approached over the course of that year, in the last two or three weeks prior to the election, the nature of the people who showed up at Kerry events changed. I went to everybody's events. And all of a sudden at the end, in the last 3 weeks, some of the wealthiest people in Iowa were at Kerry events, even small town events. And I just would like to know if there's any indication of where the big money Democrats are in this particular caucus with respect to the Democratic election.
You know, I don't know, because I don't really know who the big names are in Iowa who the rich people are. So I don't know. That's an interesting dynamic, though.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, should have been at the time a key indicator of where it was going to go.
It was a light bulb moment for me. As I looked around the room at Clark College just a couple of weeks before the caucuses, they had John Kerry event there. Everybody was in suits and leather and Ann Taylor dresses. And all year long it had been a blue-collar campaign. And I looked around the room, and this enormous light bulb went off in my head, and I said to myself, we're going to lose working for the Dean campaign because the money was
really
no longer there.
That is really interesting. And right before the caucus, too, it switched.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I wonder if it was a cause and effect. I wonder if they were drawn to Kerry because he was doing better, or if he started doing better because they were drawn to him. They were suddenly supporting him.
Well, the feeling that I had there in many discussions I had at that particular event was that his war record was going to make it such that he could actually win in a war situation against a candidate like that. And although the reason I was supporting Dean was because he was against the war and was against No Child Left Behind.
Go ahead. Yeah, so I'm just wondering, what do you think is going to happen this go-around? Because you've got at least two candidates, Clinton and Obama, who've got lots of money.
It didn't seem to matter that, I mean, Dean was making lots of money over the Internet. He was making it hand over fist.
Yeah, you're right.
It was who the person, who the people in that room were. They were a wholly different set of people. And I mean, I don't mean to sound elitist, but that's what it looked like. Throughout the year, I was walking streets and ringing doorbells and carrying signs and pulling my children around in a wagon with other blue-collar people. But in this particular event, all of a sudden, the atmosphere, the mood, and the membership of the events changed with just about overnight. Mm-hmm. It was almost as if somebody got on the phone and said, all right, here's who we're supporting.
Oh, my.
Are you involved in the campaign this year?
Well, I live in Wisconsin at this present time, but I'm involved as much as I can be. I'm involved to the extent that I want to know who's behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Well, come on over to Dubuque. You're not that far from Dubuque, Michael.
My wife works there every day.
All right, come on over for the caucuses. We'll be there. We'd like
to
have you in the audience.
Thanks.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Thanks very much for your call. And this caucus system, we're going to do a full hour on this on Wednesday, because it is hard to figure out why these people are voting this way. It's a fairly complicated system, and what he said is very interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's really interesting, yeah.
Huh. Well, check it out, Julie, when you get there.
Check that out. Put that on my list.
Okay.
The people of Wisconsin want to know.
Yeah. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. All things political. Julie Mason is our guest. She is the White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. And we go to Tom from Madison next. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hello.
Earlier, your erudite guest talked about Romney giving a speech about his religion, and I'm wondering what happened back last century when then Senator John F. Kennedy gave a speech about his religion and essentially said, "Don't worry, because I'm Catholic, I'm not going to be taking orders from the Pope and some other things." But I don't recall what he said in addition to that. Could your guest talk about that a little bit? Or perhaps you can dig out a file part of the speech.
You know, I'd have to go back and look at his speech. That one point that you made is what everyone remembers about that speech. When he said, "I won't be taking orders from the Pope," and that's what seemed to resonate. So, you know, for Romney's sake, I hope he has a great line like that. But no, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what the rest of that speech was. I'm sure it went on for at least an hour.
I'm not sure it did, Julie.
I think
he nipped it in the bud and didn't say a whole lot more than that, as I recall.
What more do you need to say?
Right, exactly.
Whatever he said, it seemed to work.
Yeah, it sure did. Somebody's gone to the internet, or somebody was going to be there in our audience and heard him get delivered. So, so fill us in, Tom. Thanks very much for the call. Where is Romney doing the speech? Do you know?
I don't know. Mm-mm.
And do you know when?
No, shortly. You know, for the longest time, he wasn't going to do it. And now, just lately, now that I think he's in trouble, he's decided to do it.
Right. Thank you, Tom, so much for the call. Let's go next to Brian from Madison. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I had a quick question. I was a big supporter of Bill Clinton, and then kind of the thing that kind of made me steer away from the Democrats is I'm kind of apolitical. I'm not really Democrat or Republican. And when he left office, kind of, the controversy surrounding all the people that he pardoned, and I was just kind of wondering, you know, who Hillary has in her corner that she might pardon if she becomes president.
You know, those are crimes yet to be committed.
Yeah, really.
Hello.
Yeah. We're here. Are you done with that answer, Julie?
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of a hypothetical. Every president does tons and tons of, usually they do tons of those commuting sentences and pardoning people. So, but usually it's I guess not always for stuff that happens during their presidency. There are things that predate their presidency that they forgive. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. So who are you leaning toward? Anybody, Brian? Ah, Brian's gone.
That's
too bad. We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us, though. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. We may as well, as long as his name was brought up, though, Julie, talk about Bill Clinton. And I don't know if you've had a chance to see him at work in Iowa, but what's happening with him? Is he putting his foot in his mouth in switching positions on his support for the war here, and that's not playing very well?
Yeah, I mean, last week he was claiming that he was always against the war. You know, I don't remember that. A lot of people don't remember that. I remember him coming out and saying that the intelligence that President Bush had was the same stuff that he had when he was president, you know, basically kind of backing President Bush up a little bit. But, you know, when you think back to that time, it's easy now to say I was against it. Everyone was for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Congress was for it. The American public was for it. There weren't that many people coming out and saying they were against it. And if they did, they were really marginalized. And so now President Clinton is saying that he was always against it. That hurts her a little. It distracts from her campaign. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when he goes to play, people just love him. You know, he's really still an incredibly popular figure in the Democratic Party, which has had a real lack of leadership since he left the White House.
Why do they love him so much, Julie? Do you know? I've been trying to figure that out.
Well, because he's flawed. And Americans love and forgive flawed characters. And also because he really is an empathizer and a warm, friendly guy, and all kinds of people like him. It's incredible to see him at a rally. There's such a swell of feeling that you can't miss. You know, it's not like he's not like anyone else. It's really interesting. Also, he left the presidency when he was quite young, so he's not in his decrepitude yet. He still seems very vital. They're not rolling him out, you know, with a walker. He's still in great shape. So people just love to see him. It's incredible.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. All things political this hour with Julie Mason, White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And what else did I want to say? Oh, yeah, the email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And we just want to remind you that we are going to be at the caucuses because Mary called. See, you never know how powerful you are. Mary called from Dubuque as we were talking about this issue and said, come on to the caucuses. And we got thinking, well, why not? Why not go? So we're going to be broadcasting from a diner in Dubuque on July. I wish it were July. January 3rd and January 4th. And we'll have you know, room for some caucus goers in the audience, and we'll have a lot of fun. Those of you who love politics, if you're listening to this hour, you love politics. So just wanted to let you know that we're off to Iowa. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More phone calls in a moment. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming at the second hour of our program today, we'll be talking with a scholar from the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. She directs the Political Engagement Project, and they've done an interesting study, Educating for Democracy, finding basically that young people in this country are much more likely to be involved in volunteer work of an apolitical sort than in politics, frequently saying we don't see the relevance of politics for our lives and we don't trust politicians or the political process. We'll be talking about that with Ann Colby, second hour of our program. Julie Mason is here now. She is the White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. The number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. And our next caller is Nan from La Crosse. Hi, Nan.
Hi. I'm just curious what the guest is hearing out in the field, so to speak, about Bill Richardson. Reason being is I was in Iowa visiting family over Thanksgiving, and my farmer brothers, or at least one of them, was leaning towards Bill Richardson. And, in fact, one of the caucus precinct chairs was definitely leaning towards Bill Richardson in that very rural area. And it seems like he's a very well-qualified candidate, but just not getting any traction. And even particular his gun control issue, or that he is an NRA member, et cetera, it seems like he'd be a good crossover candidate attracting Republicans. I'd like to comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah, been really surprised that Bill Richardson hasn't shown us anything at all this year. I really, when I heard he was going to run, I really thought that he was going to be a serious contender. But he's turned out to be almost the Fred Thompson of the Democratic field. Not a vigorous campaigner, not a scrapper. He hasn't thrown any bombs at anyone, any of the other candidates. The prevailing thinking is that he's running for vice president. He's playing nice. He's urging calm. He's not getting out front on anything. If he does have a good showing, that could certainly help him get like a vice presidential nod, if that is indeed what he's going for, which I do believe that's the case. I don't think he's running for president anymore, and I'm not sure he could win at this point. But I agree. I've been really surprised at that he hasn't done better.
He certainly has been out front on the war issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, but who hasn't? I mean, they've all kind of been out front on the war issue. And he has very unique qualifications. He's very experienced. And
yes, he is.
He's a moderate Democrat, and he has some interesting positions. And, you know, I don't know. He just hasn't picked up any steam. But he hasn't shown a lot of vim. You know, that's the thing. You got to work hard. And he does work hard, and he gets out there, but for some reason, I want to say he doesn't have the gut. You know, he does. Well, I mean, he does have a gut at times. He often jokes about his own weight problem. But he doesn't have, like, the passion for it. He's not showing people the passion. And especially this year when polls show across the board, Democrats and Republicans want change, serious change, not just a little bit. They want real change.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes across as a little more laid back, I think, than a lot of voters are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I want to add, Kathleen, I'm sorry, I was talking over you a little bit before the break, and that's terrible manners. I learned that on Hardball. I blame Hardball for that. But Romney's speech is going to be Thursday at the George Bush Presidential Library and Museum in College Station, Texas. I know, isn't that interesting? And Kennedy, of course, gave his speech in Houston, so there's a little interesting parallel there.
Huh. So, yeah, the George Bush Library. Well, that's an interesting choice. Why did he choose there?
I don't know. Very interesting venue.
Huh.
Well, obviously, he would like to cloak himself in the mantle of a Republican president. Reagan, the Reagan Library would probably be too obvious a choice. But, I mean, I think it is an interesting parallel between Kennedy's speech in Houston and then Romney goes to College Station, which is just a couple hours away.
Yeah.
And the speech is titled Faith in America.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Thanks very much, Nan, for your call. We go to Marty from Green Bay next. Hello, Marty.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My oldest just came back from Iraq, and I tell everybody, I mean, call your congressman, get us out of there, get all those kids home. But I did meet Bill Clinton in person, and I met Barack Obama in person. And Bill Clinton was very likable, but Barack seemed very genuine, and I was sweatshirt, and he gave me a hug, and he said, you know what, we're going to get us out of there. He's the only, I mean, besides Kucinich, but he's the only candidate that told us from the very beginning that it would be a mistake to go into Iraq. When you want to talk about change, let's start looking at somebody who gets the bigger picture, not as so narrow-minded and, you know, is willing to talk to Iran, and let's talk about diplomacy before we talk about this military mindset we're in. We've got to get out of that and advance as people. We're one planet.
Is your son or daughter home for good now, Marty?
Well, I'm told he's home. His tour is done, but I'm told if we don't get out of Iraq, that they can call him back for another 5 years.
Mm.
They have to have him have 1 year off, but we are stretching those troops so badly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just sent a group from Ashwaubenon on their third tour. They started at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When do we understand it was a mistake and we shouldn't be there? And if we don't solve our problems with military might.
Julie.
Yeah, well, first I want to thank your family for your sacrifice. That's quite a thing, and I'm sure that Obama expressed that as well. There's such a contrast between what the Democrats and the Republicans are saying about the war. When you listen, it's so stark. When polls show that a majority of Americans are against the war and think it was a mistake, the Republicans are sounding very different. They're very hawkish. They're itching for a conflict with Iran, and they McCain especially wants to stay the course in Iraq. So the other Republicans fall along different lines. But it's true. The Democrats, I think, have really heard that message, and it's interesting to see the variations among them. But generally, I think they're on the same page to different degrees. Especially with Iran, Hillary Clinton has talked about vigorous diplomacy rather than confrontation. I think America is not in the mood for another war. That's what I see. That's what I hear directly from people. They're exhausted and they're frightened, which is what I hear in the caller's voice, just exhaustion and exasperation.
You have to be. To have a child over there, it has to be very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard. What about this? Have you noticed in campaign discourse the Democrats changing their tone a little bit with the surge having some success, not quite as much violence? The Democrats are starting, there was an article recently, to switch their conversation and talking about the fact that there's a dysfunctional government. So what if the surge might be doing well, that government is the issue here. And also noticing that this issue of Iraq, which was front and center for so long, is maybe not as front and center right now.
That's true. I was really interested to see that as well, that people weren't ranking the war in Iraq as high on their list of priorities. And I think that part of that is because the media has largely pulled out of Iraq. They're not there as much, only intermittently, not as fully as during the beginning part of the war. So there's not as blanket coverage of what's going on over there. And yes, the surge has shown some military success, but the Democrats obviously are seizing on it, and the fact that the government there is not doing as well, they haven't shown as much progress.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Republicans in Congress, you might have heard last week, were starting to say, well, if Nouri al-Maliki doesn't show us some more progress and reconciliation, we're gonna talk about pulling funding for his government, and that's also given the Democrats some cover on that, because it's a dicey thing to talk about what you're gonna do in the war and to make threats against Iraq. It's, you know, even though people feel strongly about it, you don't want to be the one who's going to destabilize the situation or end up being wrong. You know, you see when the president talks about 9/11 and attacks like that, you don't hear people mocking him because they don't want there to be another attack, and then they look like a fool. Mm-hmm. So they're always taking very political positions on this.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Mike next from Langlade County. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I make a couple of trips to Iowa every year. And for the last 8 or 10 years, I have been trying to find somebody down there that ever even attends one of these caucuses. I have never found a single person in Iowa out of several hundred that went to one or knows anybody that went to one and voted in one. So why on earth do we put so much emphasis on Iowa, which certainly doesn't represent the country at all? And I'll listen off the air.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Well, I don't know. I don't recall offhand what percentage of eligible voters participated in the caucuses in 04. That used to be a number I had at my fingertips, but apparently it's lost in the mist. But I think there is high participation, and I think that the people who do participate are extremely educated, and they take the time to hear from a lot of different candidates and make educated and informed choices. I don't think they take it lightly at all. I do understand and hear the complaints about Iowa being first in the nation. For whatever reason, that's just how the parties want it, and I think so far it's worked. I mean, you may disagree with their choices, but I do think they take the responsibility very seriously in Iowa. Certainly, that's what I've seen. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that the caller has never met anyone who's been to a caucus.
Yes, I do too. What are you going to be looking for when you go to Iowa after Christmas, Julie?
Any shift? You know, I find talking to voters directly is the best indicator of what's going on. Hmm. The polls are crazy, you know, because they're always all over the place, and they never are, I don't want to say never, but they are often are not perfectly accurate indicators of what's going to happen. But if you go to enough events and you can feel shifts, like reporters on the ground in Iowa in 04 really felt that shift towards John Kerry at the end. Mm-hmm. His events were better attended. He had a new passion. He was talking with a new voice, and you could really see the sort of voter focus shifting to him. And then Howard Dean, you know, the more time you spent around him, the more you could see how volatile he was and how people were sort of questioning him and maybe not going to support him like they were originally. So you could feel that shift. So mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to be looking for, sort of gut-level stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike, for the call. John is next from Wausau. Hi, John.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment about the statement about Mormons being Christian. Personally, I don't care one way or the other. But labeling them Christian is a deep perversion of both religions. If you need to start educating yourself, way back, I can't remember how long ago, the University of Minnesota Press came up with a wonderful book entitled Freedom's Ferment by Alice Felt Tyler, and it's a good place to start. But I do know that one of the tenets of Mormonism is that any couple that is a good Mormon, and it has to be a couple who leads a good life and makes it, will become God. And labeling that Christian is certainly a perversion of Christianity, and not fully understanding their own theology around that is certainly a perversion of Mormonism. And so, you know, at the very least here, we have to know what we're talking about. And making statements like this underlines what a previous caller talked about the mainline press, not knowing what they're talking about. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly not for me to say what's Christian and what's not. The comments reflected what Mitt Romney says. He says that the Mormon Church is part of Christianity. Obviously, there is a great division of opinion about this. I don't, you know, certainly not for me or any newspaper reporter to decide what's Christian and what isn't.
Well, let's, without talking about the details of the Mormon faith, let's just talk about the fact that he is Mormon. And it's obvious from doing talk shows on this, people don't have much understanding of what Mormonism is. We don't know very much about it.
Still associate it with plural marriage,
exactly,
and things like that. And, you know, they think it's a cult, which is what many people also think or thought about the Catholic Church. So
right.
There seems to be a lot of misunderstanding about it. I think Romney could do a lot just by educating people about what it is.
Mm-hmm. And probably has to at this point, it seems to me, from the kinds of calls we're getting, right?
Sure, if he doesn't define it, other people will define it for him, and that's going to be a problem.
Right. We have about 45 seconds left. Tim from Appleton, hi. Hi, Tim, are you there? Tim isn't there, so let's go to, Mike from Madison. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, earlier when you were talking about Richardson, you said that he just didn't have a lot of change. He wasn't showing a lot of fire and ideas and change, and you said both Republicans and Democrats voters were looking for that, but yet Republicans support the war high percentages, support the president in high percentages. How do you explain that?
Well, I wouldn't say that they support it in high percentages. I would say that higher than Democrats. I've seen some numbers that show, 40 to 50% of Republicans still support the war. I wouldn't really call that a high percentage. It's not overwhelming. But I do think that a lot of people are concerned about what the Democrats are proposing, pulling out of Iraq, negotiating with Iran. I think that there certainly are a goodly number of voters who are uncomfortable with that approach.
Julie, thank you so much for being with us. I really enjoyed this hour.
No,
thanks.
Thank you. It was terrific. I love the calls.
Aren't they good? Yeah.
They're great.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Julie Mason, who is the White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle, our guest on All Things Political this Monday at 9. Just a reminder, we are going to Iowa for the caucuses. It's official now, January 3rd and January 4th. We'll be doing our programs from a diner in Dubuque and then going to the caucus that night to see how it all works and then talking about it the next day. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and for on-air production as well. And thanks for your calls, everybody. News ahead, and we'll return. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.